Michael Mann is arguably the most famous climate scientist on the planet. You've probably seen the hockey stick curve graph, showing how dramatically our fossil fuel use has warmed the Earth. His new book goes back into the planet's deep history to look for clues to get us out of the climate crisis. In Our Fragile Moment, Mann, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, writes that we're living on a Goldilocks planet. It's not too hot and not too cold. It's just right for us humans. But he says this is a moment when all of that could change.
The global climate was remarkably stable for 6,000 years prior to the Industrial Revolution. And we built this massive societal infrastructure. It's dependent on the stability of that climate. And what we're doing now, of course, is we are rapidly warming the planet and leaving that fairly small envelope of variability that existed in the past. And that's what makes this moment so fragile. If we continue on the course that we're on, ultimately, we will exceed our adaptive capacity as a civilization and as a species. This is a critical juncture. It's not too late to take the actions necessary to preserve our fragile moment. But if we don't take those actions in the near term, it will give way to something much less hospitable.
The Gaia hypothesis from the 1970s suggests that Earth's systems regulate conditions on the planet and make the climate resilient up to a point. How has this hypothesis been used by environmentalists and climate deniers over the years?
Yeah, it's sort of ironic. The Gaia hypothesis was put forward by the iconoclastic scientist James Lovelock and the great scientist Lynn Margulis back in the early 1970s. And it basically holds that there are sort of restoring mechanisms in the Earth system, and they include the behavior of life itself that help keep the planet within habitable bounds. It's almost like it's a sentient creature, you know, regulating its environment to preserve life, but that's not what it's doing. And so you can see how it could be taken out of context in any number of ways. Now, environmentalists liked the sort of Earth mother, sort of Earth goddess framing, especially in the early 1970s. It was sort of part of the ethos of that time. But at the same time, this idea that the system is stable could be hijacked by special interests, by polluters, to say, oh, well, you know, this system has these restoring mechanisms, so we can basically do whatever we want, and it'll just fix itself. Of course, that's a distortion. That's not what Lovelock and Margulis were arguing. And when you look at Earth history over the billions of years, you can see examples of Gaian mechanisms that have helped keep the planet within habitable bounds. But there are exceptions where life actually almost caused, and frankly did cause, the climate to sort of spin out of control. And of course, today we are in a position where we could do that if we continue adding insult to injury with carbon pollution and all the other detrimental impacts on the environment associated with human activity.
The book looks at several time periods in the paleoclimate record. For you, which event in this deep history holds the most salient lesson for us now about our own moment of climate crisis and how we get out of it?
It's tough to choose, I'll tell you, because there are so many interesting episodes. One that I focus on in some detail, it's the one that killed off the dinosaurs, or at least, as we like to say, the non-avian dinosaurs, because birds are actually dinosaurs. We see dinosaurs every day, but every dinosaur larger than a dog basically perished in this event. And it was an asteroid impact 65 million years ago. It ejected all of this debris into the atmosphere, blocking out the sun, leading to a fairly dramatic cooling, which basically caused any creatures that couldn't burrow down into the ground or underneath the ocean to shield themselves from that cooling. It caused their extinction. There's a lesson there, which is that one species extinction can be another species boon. When the dinosaurs perished, they left some niches that were filled by the very small mammals that were scurrying around behind the rocks at the time. They are our ancestors. The dinosaurs, they didn't know it was coming, and they couldn't do anything about it. We don't have that excuse.
Right. You're right. We're not dinosaurs. It's good news.
My daughter calls me a dinosaur, but we're not dinosaurs. We have agency. We can change.
And along those lines, you write that climate denial is no longer the biggest obstacle to solving the climate crisis. It's doom. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you mean?
It's no longer credible to deny that climate change is happening because we all see it. Polluters can no longer claim it's not happening, but they still want to keep us addicted to fossil fuels. So they've turned to other tactics. My last book, The New Climate War, was really about that. And one of those tactics, ironically, is doom mongering. It sounds odd, right? But if you really come to believe that there's nothing that you can do, that you have no agency, then it potentially leads you down that same path of disengagement as outright denial. And there are bad actors who have fanned the flames of doomism because they know it will lead many of those who would otherwise be on the front lines. And that's what's so pernicious. Environmental activists, progressives, people who really care about the environment. If you can deactivate them, then as a polluter, that's a major win. So some players in this space claim that we've warmed the planet enough that we're releasing massive amounts of methane from the permafrost, and it's a runaway process, and we can't stop it no matter what we do. We're all going to go extinct, and we might as well just enjoy the ride, I suppose. There's nothing we can do about it, and that's not true. There's no evidence that that's happening with methane right now, and sometimes I've seen them weaponize the paleoclimate record for that very narrative. And that's part of what got me interested in writing this book, because if you look at the PETM, stands for the Paleocene Eocene Thermal Maximum, it just rolls off the tongue, I know, it was a rapid warming event. And the doomers will say, oh, and it was runaway methane-driven warming, and it caused all these extinctions, just like, you know, it's going to cause our extinction. And that's not true. You warm up the ocean bottom, you can release some of the methane that was stored there, and that can increase the warming, but it's a modest positive feedback. It adds a little bit of the warming, maybe 10%. The bulk of the warming, 90% of the warming of the PETM, had nothing to do with methane feedbacks. The bulk of it was carbon dioxide, not carbon dioxide from fossil fuel burning, natural carbon dioxide from volcanic outgassing. There was an unusually intense sort of episode of volcanic activity that pumped carbon into the atmosphere about 100 times slower than today. So we point to the PETM as an example of one of the most rapid climate change events we can find in the geological past. But even that is slow compared to today. The lesson there is, you know, we are warming the planet faster. That's an even greater threat. But it's not cause for doom. The thing that caused the warming was the carbon dioxide. And we can stop warming the planet with carbon dioxide by stopping the burning of fossil fuels.
Why do you think there's still a lack of urgency among politicians and maybe even people in the general public to take that agency and act on climate change? And how do we fix that?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, ultimately, there's been a lot of misinformation. I would call it disinformation. They're intentionally communicating misleading claims, untruths about climate change. Polluters, conservative media outlets, you know, conservative politicians who see themselves largely as advocates for the very powerful and wealthy fossil fuel industry. That's the problem. The scientific, you know, community has uniformly said that climate change is real. It's caused by human activity, particularly the burning of fossil fuels, and it's having these negative consequences. There's no question about that within the scientific community. And then yet when you look at the public, there's a substantial fraction, not so many who are like hardcore climate deniers. The polling suggests they only number about 10%, but there is a wide, much larger, probably 40 to 50% of the confused middle. They think there's some sort of debate. They're not sure that, you know, they're not convinced it's really that much of a crisis, or maybe we can't really do anything about it anyway, or I've got all of these other kitchen table problems to worry about in the meantime, and this seems so abstract. It's becoming less abstract because the rubber is hitting the road now, and I think that is changing the equation. I think we are seeing a shift because of that.
Michael Mann is the Presidential Distinguished Professor and Director of the Center for Science, Sustainability, and the Media at the University of Pennsylvania. His new book is Our Fragile Moment, How Lessons from Earth's Past Can Help Us Survive the Climate Crisis. There's more at AlleghenyFront.org. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsapple.